Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children. Today we're going to talk about PDA and the unique challenges that come with parenting a child with a PDA profile.
Can you explain what PDA is and your experience of it, please, Natalie?
Yeah, sure. So according to the PDA Society, PDA stands for Pathological Demand Avoidance. So it's widely used to be a profile on the autism spectrum. It says we're still in the early stage of understanding and PDA research is in its infancy. So for us, PDA it's an anxiety behaviour, but it's that lack of control. We have been told that our son has a PDA profile, but they don't diagnose it, so it's not written down.
What were the early signs of PDA that you noticed in your son?
It's flat out refusal to do things, even something that he enjoys or he wants to do, he would refuse to do it. And that was really hard to understand because we're saying, oh, do you want to go to the park? Let's go to the park, something he loves. But he's like, no, getting really, you know, just cannot cope with that. We needed to do lots of research to try and understand where that was coming from. As he's gotten older, it's becoming much easier to handle. Once we had a better understanding of what PDA is, we were able to adapt like the way we present things to him. So the way we suggest what we're going to do, we can't say, put your shoes on or clean your teeth. We have to approach it like, it might be a good idea to put your shoes on now. Or would you like to clean your teeth before we do stories or after? So it's giving him choices, making him feel like he has some control, even though you're getting what you want at the end of it.
Awesome. We have to do that too. One of the strategies that I find works quite well is you need to have a shower today. When would you like to have a shower? Would you like to have one now? Would you like to have one before you go to bed? So there's option.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think washing can be quite a sensory thing, can't it? So if they're having a day where they're struggling anyway, to be put under water and the temperature changes and stuff, that can really be quite a massive deal for them to cope with, can't it? So giving them that choice really helps to minimise the pressure and the anxiety.
Absolutely. So what other strategies have you found useful when you're supporting your son with avoidant behaviours?
We always give him like plenty of notice if we're going out for the day. So the day before, we'll tell him what we're doing the next day, particularly for the weekends. We'll show him pictures of where we're going. Those visuals can be really important. They seem like such a simple thing, but they really do seem to immediately relieve any anxiety and stress. You can almost see the physical reaction when you put a timetable in front of them, certainly for us anyway. And then so we'll remind him again in the morning and then just give him plenty of time to get ready and allow extra time for putting on shoes, getting to the car, that kind of thing. Because any kind of rushing is just going to make them more anxious. So what we found is it's really important to keep your own sense of calm and get prepared as much as you possibly can. And also it's about changing the language. So really softening everything. And taking away any unnecessary demands. I think they call it low demand parenting. Anything that isn't essential for the day, just let it go. Concentrate on what absolutely has to get done. One of the things we struggle with a lot is food choices, particularly breakfast time. So first thing in the morning, he often can't choose what he wants. So we'll present two choices. So he has an option. If we're met with silence, I'll make a decision and hope that he eats it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
My son says he can't make choices. He needs an awful lot of support to make a choice because there's so much anxiety around choosing the wrong thing. For example, well-meaning professionals have given him several options of what do you want to do? And for him, that's really, really overwhelming, coming from a good place. But for him, more than a couple of choices is really, really hard. He starts to worry that he's going to make the wrong choice. And if it involves choosing between one person and another to do something with, then he's going to have that added pressure that he's going to hurt someone's feelings. And it absolutely paralyzes him to the point that he won't make a choice and he'll end up doing nothing rather than something. So
Oh.
his response is to shut down. That's what happens if he gets too many choices and he's overwhelmed. It's very tricky. I would say we found no more than two choices. And as you were saying, lots of warning about the choice that's coming up and support with making that choice.
When we were thinking about what parenting would be like and having a family, our ideal would be sitting around the table every evening for dinner together. And that is just something that he cannot cope with. Sitting at a table with people to eat is really hard. I think it's very sensory with the smells, and just he likes to zone out when he eats, so he likes to eat in front of the TV. That's how he's most relaxed, and that's when he's most likely to eat. So we've given up on that.
That's where they're similar. It makes me smile when you say that because all these things, I think after a while, you automatically do a lot of these changes, like eating at the table. My son doesn't eat at the table. We took that away early on for the reasons that you've said.
We always make sure there is a place for him and he's aware of it. And there's the odd occasion where he'll be like, I'll come and sit with you. And that just makes it all the more special when it does happen because it's coming from him, it's his choice, and you just appreciate it more.
What tips do you have for communicating with your son, particularly to help him feel more in control and reduce anxiety around the demands?
Helping him to feel into, like he's in control, so giving him choices, but also softening things. So asking him, how do you feel about this? Have you thought about this? Or would you like to do this first or this? All those sorts of things. So it's not like we are going here, we are doing this, grab your coat, grab your bag, off we go. Because then he'd be immediately like, whoa.
So many demands.
Yeah, and that's why mainstream just doesn't suit him because there's so many instructions like children, come and put your bags away, sit down, be quiet, you know?
And you get so used to saying the one thing at a time and drip feeding it because, as well as the demand, it's that processing of all that information.
And also I think like it's such a learning curve at the beginning when you don't understand, but once you do a little bit of research and you start implementing a few of these little tips, it then becomes automatic, and then you don't realize you're really doing it all the time because it is just so automatic.
I remember when my son was at mainstream school and he was being observed by an autism specialist in the classroom. And the specialist included in the report that she wrote up afterwards how my son's teacher, who was also the Senko and knowledgeable about PDA, had approached getting him to take his gloves off. He was very anxious at this time. And as she walked away, she just said, "Gloves off so you can type," with a questioning tone, you know, rather than a command. If she'd given him this is a firm instruction, he would probably have frozen and not done it.
Exactly. It wouldn't have worked, would it?
It was new to me then. I'd not come across it at that point, but gradually it becomes part of your everyday language.
Yeah, that's very clever. Just that small little comment, but no eye contact, just as you're casually walking by, and it's thought in their head more than it becomes an instruction, really.
Do you find that your son is ever misunderstood in terms of the PDA profile?
Oh, yes, because it can look, for those without knowledge, it could just look like they're being really rude and that you're being a really bad parent because you can't control your child. Even close family members would be like, whoa, they're not doing a very good job. Not that they actually came out and said that, but that's how it can feel sometimes because to them, your child's just refusing and being rude.
And I suppose it can look like you're pandering to bad behaviour.
Yeah, you're letting them get away with it, which is not at all because it's because we have that understanding of what their day is and what how they're feeling, and we're trying to coach them through it as best we can. But it can look to outsiders that we're being weak, we're letting them get away with it, we have no sense of discipline.
How have you dealt with that?
With the people who in our lives that matter, we explain, this is what this is. This is how he's feeling. This is why he's behaving as he is. And this is what we're doing to support him. Sometimes they'll get it. Great. If they don't get it, I'm not worried because I'm focusing on my child and his needs. And anyone who doesn't matter, I just ignore them because they don't understand. And it's part of the reason we're doing this podcast, isn't it, really, to raise awareness? Because it would be good if there was more understanding out there. It would make our lives a lot easier. We wouldn't feel that sort of extra stress from outside influences when you're already dealing with a stressful situation yourself.
Now, you've got two children. How does your son's PDO profile impact the family dynamics and your daily routines?
So it's really tricky because we kind of have different rules for different siblings in a way. Our daughter does sit at the table with us for meals, and we try not let her sit at the table. But obviously, you have to have some flexibility because she's seeing her brother sit in front of the TV. And it may end up that she wants to sit in front of the TV too. And we probably have to let her do that because you can't really have one rule for one and one rule for the other. But for now, we sort of explain to her that he struggles with that. And that's why he sits there. But sometimes he'll come and sit with us. And for now, she's accepting of that. But we'll see how it goes. There's things like we let her have her iPad at the table because her brother is watching his iPad or watching the TV. And in my ideal view of parenting long, long ago, I would absolutely not have allowed screens at the table. You do what works.
Yeah, food is a whole separate episode, but certainly for my son, he needs a screen to eat, so he's not focusing on his food. What types of support or resources have you found the most helpful when you're navigating PDA?
The PDA Society has a website which is really helpful. So there's lots of information and support there. And we've done a lot of reading around the subject. Dr. Naomi Fisher is one that we go to. She has online webinars you can pay to watch, and she gives some really good tips and advice about PDA behaviours. And then just generally, you can Google low demand parenting and get up a load of tips and just start following and implementing those little things. It's just small little changes, but they do have a bigger impact.
Do you have any advice to offer for parents who are just beginning to understand PDA and maybe their child is struggling?
I'd say do your research, let go of any massive big demands, just stick to the essentials, basically. I'd let go of anything that isn't absolutely necessary in your day. And sometimes that can actually be really difficult because it can be something that you yourself really want to do. So, as an example, in the holidays, I really wanted to take my son to the cinema, and it's something that he really struggles with. He doesn't like it. But I'd found a film that I really thought he would love. And we talked about it several days before. I showed him pictures of the cinema, I showed him a trailer of the film. So, I did everything right, followed all my tips. And then when it came to actually leaving, he could not bring himself to go. And I was disappointed because I'd been really looking forward to doing it. But it's just a case of you have to put them first and what they can cope with. And it was the right thing to do for him was to stay home that day. He didn't cope with anything much that day. It just wasn't the right day for him.
Exactly. And just because he didn't cope that day doesn't mean that he won't be able to give it a try at another time if he feels
Exactly.
like it.
Yeah. And we also had that on the weekend as well. We'd arranged to go and meet my mother-in-law at a park, and we told him the day before we're all set to go. I'd packed the car up, shown him pictures of everything, put my daughter in the car even, and then my son was nowhere to be seen. We're like, where is he? Hiding in his room. I'm not coming. So that took a lot of unpicking, and there's stress involved because we're aware there's family members at the park waiting for us. It's just under an hour's drive away. And you're thinking about what are they going to think? We're going to be late or we're not coming at all. You've got all that in your head, but still having to remain calm because the best thing for them is just calm and let them work through their stuff. So he took himself off and did Lego, which is one of the things that he does when he's dysregulated. That's how he organizes himself and gets himself calm again. And then once he was feeling calm and we'd taken the pressure off and said, look, if it's not going to work today, it's not going to work today. But this is your last opportunity to see this family member before they go back home, which is quite far away. So we had time to think about it and we did end up going, but we were an hour and a half late.
That's a win that you got there.
Absolutely.
And how was he? Did he enjoy it?
He loved it when we were there. He absolutely loved it.
Excellent.
We hope this episode has helped to shed light on the journey of parenting a child with a PDA profile.
Yeah, we're sending so much love and encouragement to every parent walking this path. You're not alone. Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.